Here we go. We're in Maseches Challah. This is the Chazara. We're holding in Perek Aleph. Mishnah Hey. Yeah. Okay. So we left off saying that for someone to be Challah, 1-5. For someone to be Chayiv in Challah, it needs to essentially be made of one of the five grains and baked in a normal way. Baked thick regular dough, baked in an oven. Which, by the way, would include, say, cookies, for example. Right? Doesn't have to be a loaf. Be cookies, if you bake cookies and whatever it is, that's also called, that's also chayv and chalef, make a sufficiently large dough.
So you're saying that, like, angels take chalef for their regular?
Betach, yeah. Yeah. So, but if it's cooked either in a not baked in oven way, like for example, it's like fried in oil, whatever it is, or, you know, fried like a pancake, then it's not chayv. The heat's coming from underneath, so to speak. And also if the dough is batter, not dough. If the mix is a batter, so that's also not a chayv and challah.
So then what's the difference for word cookie?
But I think the cookie dough is like thick like bread though, isn't it? It is, right? That's the point. If it's cooked like bread and it starts with a thick dough, then it's chayv. If it's a batter, it's butter. How battery is batter?
Sugar, though,
I can't say.
No,
it doesn't matter. Baked grain. So that's what we're picking up here in Mishnah Hay. We're basing Isa, if you have dough, shetchilasa sufganin. Now sufganin, let's say, means one shot is like spongy things, like pancakes, but it means really, it starts out in a way that would make it ineligible. Like for example, it's batter. Okay? Fasofa sufganin, and it ended up, after you cooked it, it still is cooked in a way like sufganin, so that could mean like pancakes fried in a batter. Any way, if you boil it, anything that's not in a normal, try it. Exactly. Definitely, the sufganin comes from this word, although it's not clear that this means that. It means like donuts. But anyways, sufganin here really is just a code word for like any kind of non-normal way, really. So then, patur min achala. So then, if it starts out as ineligible and ends ineligible, then it's patur from challah. However, tchilasa isa, if it started out being regular dough, and then sofa sufganin, but in the end you ended up boiling it, let's say, or frying it, still you're chayv because it was a dough when you made it. Alternatively, tchilasa sufgan, if it started out being like a thin, like a batter, v'sofa isa, but you manage to thicken it up and make it into, cook it like a regular bread, then chayav is b'challah, it's chayav. So the only exemption for challah, in terms of the way it's baked, is if it, from beginning to end of the process, always is not normal thick dough and not baked in the oven. V'chein ha-knuvkaos chayavos. And similarly, knuvkaos, that's you take a loaf of bread, and you basically make it into like crumbs and feed it to these baby food. So you might have thought, since it's ends up, its destination is never to be bread, it's just going to be crumbs, breadcrumbs, essentially, that would be patur. No, chayv, as long as when it's either isa or cooked the way bread is cooked, then it's chayv and challah.
It's interesting because I read that the halacha for croutons, which are...
The bracha you're talking about?
Yeah.
Those are croutons are complicated halacha. Croutons.
Honestly, the idea is that habamina. I heard one plaque that's saying, the bread croutons, the fried ones, the bread ones, if they made the bread for the sake of making croutons, it's mazona.
If they made it...
Not like a restaurant that took old bread and turned it into garlicky. That's
right.
Hamotzi.
That's right.
But they said if...
It also depends if it's fried or baked. And it depends what's inside it. Croutons are complicated. For that reason, because they're usually leftover bread.
But it's at habamina.
Yeah. Well, that's dealing with the... That's with brachas. I'm talking about...
Recognizing that there's something different about it,
that's all. Mishnah Vav. Okay, now this let me say this Mishnah outside first. This Mishnah is, even the Gemara says it's confusing, so it's definitely confusing. Basically, you're going to have a Machlokas and Hillel and Shammai, but you have two sentences. One sentence is going to be talking about before you bake it, you're combining flour with boiling water. In one case, you're going to be pouring the flour into the boiling water, and in the second case, you're going to be pouring the boiling water onto the flour before you bake it. Like, think bagels. Now, so that should be the same din. Like, would either yes, no, or it's either if you boil it first and bake it, either patur or chayv and challah. But the way the Mishnah is going to read, the first sentence will say that Hillel and Shammai argue one way, and then the second sentence will say Hillel and Shammai have the exact opposite argument. So you won't be able to add up their shitas because it's two different tanaim in the first and second sentence. There's a machlokus if Hillel says yes or if Shammai says yes, basically. So it's the Mishnah that reads confusingly, and here it is inside now. It says hama'isa. If you, ma'isa means that you pour your flour into boiling water. Okay, so that's not, it's not exactly a bagel, but it's similar to a bagel. So you boil it first, and then you bake the boiled flour. Beshame potrin, beshame, I say that doesn't count, since it was boiled first, it's exempt from challah. But it's still mechayiv, it's still say, no, you baked it, ultimately it's chayiv. And now, the flip side, hachalita, chalita means like to scald. It means you took boiling water and poured it onto your flour. Right, same story really, and they obviously mix up, and then you have boiled flour and you bake it. Here, beshame is mechayivin, and beshame is potrin. And again, so you won't be able to reconcile those two. So the Gemara says, the machlokas, who says which? Halach l'maisa, which stands as like Beis Hillel, is it's chayv. Okay? So bagels would be chayv, if you boil them first. Chalas toda v'rakike nazir. When a person brings a toda, a korban toda, he brings 40 loaves. They're actually in different, it's not so important here. They're different, some are leavened, some are unleavened, whatever. And rakike nazir, the nazir brings three kinds of breads. Rakiken are like wafers. But in any case, all these things, you end up, the part of the loaves that you bake as normal dough, we're not focused on how they're made here. So we're focused on the fact that they're being made for Hekdesh. And instead of Riso Seichem, your dough, your kneading trough, so if it's for if it's made for Hekdesh, when you knead it already, it'll be exempt. So that's the point of the Mishnah here. It says, Asan La'atmo, if the guy made him for himself, in other words, he made this loaf because he needed to bring it for a Toda, so then even though it's normal bread, still putter. It's putter because it's hektish. However, if the guy is just a regular baker and his plan is to stand on the side of the road by the base of Mikdash for people to pick up loaves on the way to bring their toda offerings, limkor, if his genuine was to sell it, bashuk, then chayiv. Then it's chayiv because the regular loaf, and even though the fact is it's probably headed for hektish, he had in mind, well, if I don't sell it, I'll eat it myself for dinner. So he hasn't given it over to hektish yet. He's waiting to see. He's tentatively given it. So in that case, the regular loaf being sold, and therefore be chayiv. Mishnah Zayin. The case here is a baker who's going to make dough, but to make sa'or. Sa'or is sourdough. They use that instead of yeast cubes like today we have. You need to put a bit of sourdough into your dough to make it ferment properly. So he's the supplier. So the issue is going to be, normally we say the chiyuv of challah kicks in once you do. For flour, anyways, once you do gilgal, once you knead it up well. If you have the requisite amount, the 43 eggs worth, then it'll be chayav d'challah. The issue here is, though, his plan is, he's just making dough, and before he bakes, he's going to give it out to people in little portions. So really, it's a temporarily lump together, but in the end, he's going to be giving out, you know, a piece to you, and a piece to you, and a piece to you, all less than a shear, and never baked as bread in a big amount. So the question is, since that situation is going to be chayav. So it's going to come out first, we're going to say, nachtam sha'asa sor l'chalek. If a nachtam makes sa'or, you know, sourdough, and his intention is to be mechalek, to give it to different people, it's still chayav b'chala. Anyways, why? Not because of anything I told you before. The truth is, if he would certainly be mechalek it, and it never would become baked as a big loaf, it would be putter. The issue is, again, if he can't sell it, he's going to eat it himself. So if there's a sufficient amount, he's thinking, well, if I don't sell it, I'll bake it and eat it as a full loaf for myself, sourdough bread, and therefore it's chayav. However, we'll see in the sefer now, nashim sh'nasim nachtam, if the women gave them their supplies, Lasos lehen sa'or, and they said, listen, take our flour and give us back, we want sourdough. So now, for sure, whatever he makes is giving back, because he's got the bar lined up already, and therefore, there's no suffix what will happen. So therefore, im ein b'shal achas men kishiur, if none of them gave him 5/4 of a kav, you know, 43 eggs worth, so then there'll never be a loaf, there'll never be a loaf made out of a proper amount, because he knows he has a buyer, so he can't end up with him. Then p'turim in a challah, then it's exempt from challah. So the inference, of course, is, if any one woman gives the baker 43 eggs worth, you know, 2.5 kilos worth of flour, so then the whole dough needs to be tithed, because that dough will end up becoming loaf, but baked by her. Okay. Okay. Isis kalavim literally means like dog dough. The point is, I'll say that outside also here. So you basically, you know, times were tough back then, and the richer you were, the better bread you could afford. What happens is, to make bread like with fine flour, without grit in it, and without whole wheat, and without bran, all that kind of stuff, takes time and effort. And you know, it's like in Eretz Yisrael, you know, they inject the meat with water. It's terrible. It's ridiculous. But anyways, to bulk it up. So they also, to bulk up the bread, they have, you know, not aware of that. If you buy meat, you'll see it says only 10% water. You never seen it before? Oh, I see. Yeah, they inject it with water to pump it up. And if you buy chopped meat, a lot of times they even put breadcrumbs inside. You have to be careful. They bulk it up.
It looks crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It is crazy. In any case, in America, it's for sure legal. In any case,
it's illegal, you said.
In America, I don't think you can do that. You can't put additives into that kind of stuff. It's dangerous. I think it's dangerous. It's not. Anyways, leave that. The point is, so in those days. What? So yeah, yeah. So you're paying by the pound. You're paying by the pound, and you wonder why when you cook it. So same thing here. They needed to bulk up the flour. So what they do? They left. If they were poor and they couldn't afford it, they left more and more of the bran inside. So we said there's two kinds of bran. The bran that you know you sprinkle like your wheat germ that you put inside your cereal in the good old days. So that's called suban. That's edible. That's cool. No big deal, right? But there's a more coarse bran that's really like basic horrible plant material that you don't want in your bread. It's called mursan. We've seen it in other Mishnah. We saw they use it as like an exfoliant. Remember, they're using it to scrub their skin. You can imagine, it doesn't taste so good. So the point is, obviously, the more bran you have, the less good the bread is. So at some point, it becomes the kind of thing people wouldn't want to eat. So isos haklava means like low quality bread that has lots of bran in it. So we're going to say, listen, if the shepherd, who's like the bottom of the social, you know, totem pole. If he's prepared to eat it, then it's still considered human food. If a shepherd wouldn't eat it, then forget it. It's just animal food, and it loses its status as bread. So that'll be the nafkamino. The Mishnah will have 1,000 nafkaminos. The point will be, if this thing has the status of bread, because people will eat it, then it's bread in all accounts. And if the roa, the shepherd, wouldn't eat it, then it may look like a loaf of bread, but it's not halakhically bread at all. Okay, so that's the case inside. It says, isas ha-kalavim. Dough of dogs, meaning it's got lots of additives. I should speak out. It's not that additives is the wrong word. They're not putting bran in. They're just not taking the bran out. You understand? They're just not sifting it very well. That's the point. Bizman sharon ochlin memena. If the shepherd's prepared to eat that bread, then it's regular bread. And therefore, first of all, chayavis b'chala. You have to take your chala because it's bread. And also, uma arvin ba. You can use it for an erev chatzeros. Remember, you make an erev of your courtyard. You need to have some food that everyone's sharing. So it's food. Use edible. You can make what's called shitufi muvaos. That's the same as an erev chaser, except for the whole mavli, for the whole alleyway. And you make a regular, you make a birchas hamazon on it, and hamotzi. Your bench, they can make a normal, it keeps the same bread, so hamotzi. And it's usable even for a zimin, no big chiddush there really. The nas is b'yom tov, and you're allowed to make it on yom tov. Now you're not allowed, the din on yom tov is you only can do malacha for things that are shav l'chol nefesh, really ochol nefesh, for food, and things like food. So if it's considered food or edible, so you can make it on Shabbos.
On yom tov.
Correct, on yom tov. Now obviously, we'll see in the converse in a second, will be if the roa wouldn't eat it, so it'll become usher to make on Shabbos, because it's not really considered human food. Usher to make on yom tov. Sorry, yom tov. And a person who makes matzah out of this kind of flour is yotzi on Pesach. It's sufficient. It's edible. However, now ein haroan ochlim emena, if the roa wouldn't be prepared to eat it, so it's not considered now lose the shame bread. And really, it's still food. It's still humanly edible, but it's not bread anymore. And therefore, whatever bread can do, it can't. So ein achayav es b'chala. First of all, it's not considered chala, not chayav n'chala anymore, because it's considered like animal food. Vein marvin ba, you can't use it for an erev chatzeros. Vein mishtatfin ba, you can't use it for as the food for the shetufim uvaos to connect your alleyway. Vein mivarchin aleh, you don't make a motzi on it. Now you would make a shahakol on it because it's still edible as food. Right? Not inedible. It's nechal al yedei chak. It's like edible only in a pressing situation. So such a food would lose its bracha. A similar case might be, let's say you have moldy bread which you normally throw out, but like if in famine times you'd eat it, it wouldn't make you sick necessarily, it just would taste horrible. Let's say that's mitzias. So
the mold anyway, and you can take like the good bread.
Okay, well, whatever, I'm thinking of a case. Okay. Soggy bread, I don't know, bread that, but the kind of bread that you would throw away, but like you could eat it if you had to. So that is called ne'achal yedei chak, and still, it loses bracha bread anymore, now it's just considered charcoal. Okay? Okay. And therefore, you can't make a zimun on it because it's not bread. You can't cook such a bread on Yom Tov because it's animal food, not human food. It's not food, so it can't be considered matzah for Pesach. But however, whether it's edible by humans or only really like not normally eaten by humans, so since it is edible, if they wanted to, matamat tumas ochlin, it does convey tumah. Tumas ochlin just depends on it being human food. And it's still food, it's just not the kind of food you'd want to eat. So it would be conveying too much. The concept you see oftentimes by Pesach, it comes up a lot, is eno roi lechol, or it's achilas, eno, eno roi lechilas kelim. It's not even a dog will eat it. That now means it's no longer food anymore at all, and it wouldn't, not food, not just not bread, and therefore it wouldn't even be metamet tumas ochlin. It's nothing. It's garbage. But that's, this is isis klav. A dog would certainly eat this food. Okay. Okay. Mishnah Tes is a summary. Another covers a lot of things. It's going to say that challah and truma are the same across the board. Challah is even called truma. So all the things halachas of truma will apply to challah, and here they are in brief. Hachalava truma, when it comes to challah or truma the gift of the kohen, the top of the portion, chayavin alein misa, if you eat them b'shogeg, there's a chiv misa on them, right? Serious business. V'chomesh, if you eat it b'shogeg, when you recompense the kohen, if it's b'shogeg, you have to add a chomesh also. Chomesh means adding 25%, so if you ate four loaves of challah by accident, you'll have to give him five loaves back. Vasur in the zarim, if you're not a kohen, you can't eat it, neither challah nor truma. Vehem nichse kohen, it's property of the kohen, meaning even though only a kohen can eat this stuff, but a kohen can do what he wants with it. He could sell it to other kohanim and take the money and buy himself whatever he wants with it. So it's his chattel, he can do what he wants with it. It's owned by him. As opposed to, let's say, Meiser Sheni, which is owned as Mammon Gavoa, it's God's property, you have no right to do business with it at all. Remember, we even said it wouldn't work by Meiser Sheni. If you try to sell it, the sales in Chal, because it's not yours to sell. Here it is the Kohen to do what he wants with it. Va'olin be'echad umea. And va'olin be'echad umea. If you have 101, the words just say it goes up with 101. What it means is if you have a mixture of chulin and truma, or chulin and chala. So unlike the normal case where the mixture is forbidden if it's bichdei nos and tam, meaning if it's, you need 60 times against to annul it, truma and chala is more strict, you need 100 times against it to annul it. So if you have 101 altogether, meaning 100 of chulin and 1 of truma or 1 of chala, then it's considered to be a mixture that's annulled and you're allowed, a zar can eat it. If you have less, if you had 99 parts chulin and 1 part truma or 1 part chala for a total of 100, now you can't eat it, it's not batel, you have to sell it to a kohen for the price of 99. One of them is his and 99 you could sell, but you can't eat it yourself as a non-kohen. And utun rechitzas yadayim, before you eat from challah or truma, you have to wash your hands, just like how we wash our hands for bread, the same kind of washing. The reason why is the rabbi said that a person's hands, unless he knows they're clean, midrabbanan, are called shniyim latuma, they're second degree tuma. And challah and truma is susceptible up to a shlishi of tuma. So in other words, if your hands are shniyim, secondary tumas, and they touch challah or touch truma, it'll be matame to make a tame as a shlishi, but it can't be eaten as a shlishi. So therefore, you have to wash your hands first. Even if you as a person are tahor, that's the point. If you're tahor, you've been to the mikveh that morning, and you're tahor, but you've in the last 2 hours you haven't watched what you're doing, you have to wash your hands. Like when you wash for bread, the same din as washing for bread. V'ha'erev shemesh, they need erev shemesh, which means they need, like, literally means like setting of the sun, but it actually means seisuk al-chavim, what do you want from me? Meaning, that if a kohen became tame, a tuma, like he was a zav, and the end of his 7 days he goes to the mikvah, okay? So you go to the mikvah in the afternoon, men go to the mikvah in the afternoon, women really too, whatever, go to the mikvah in the afternoon, and then for the rest of the day he's like not fully tahor yet, he's what's called a tvul yom, the day of his tefillah, which means he's still a sheni l'tumah. Tevul yom is still a sheni l'tumah, like a bal keri, and all that kind of business. And they're matama truma to be a shlishi. So, but once he's gone to the mikvah and he has erev shemesh, meaning the sun has set and he's had 3 stars have come out, right? So then, now he becomes mutter to eat truma again. So that's the point. Mikvah's not enough. You also need the new day. Vein nitalin min atahor ala tame. You're not allowed to, if you have 2 batches of dough, one tar, one tame, you can't take challah from one on the other, or truma of 2 batches, one on the other. The reason why is because the rabbis were afraid that since it's a din of mukaf, we'll see in a second here, it says it has to be element of mukaf, it has to be, mukaf literally means surrounded, but what it means is that the different batches are together. In other words, if you have 10 bags of wheat, you want to take, you can take truma from one bag on all 10 bags, but the bags have to be together in the same room. Okay, they have to be together. Now, the problem is if something is tahor and something is tame, they're afraid if you put it all together, some will touch and you'll be metame, the tahor stuff. And the Torah forbids you to make truma tame or chala tame. And therefore, the rabbi midrabban, and they said, you shouldn't tie tame and tahor or vice versa, because that means since you need mukaf, they need to be close to each other, they might come to be metame one or the other. So we can build them separate, so don't tie the one on the other. Okay, and finally, umina davar hagamur. It needs to be on a completed thing, meaning that you can't take truma too early in the process, i.e. before onus maestros, before it's edible as food, and similarly challah, if you haven't yet mixed it with water, you just want to take it on the flour, it's too early, it won't be challah, you have to take challah again. Now finally, ha'omer kol garani truma, if a person says my entire threshing floor, my entire storehouse is truma, or he says kol isasi challah, my entire dough I'm giving to the kohen is challah, lo amar klum, that's a meaningless sentence, ad shishar mikzas, you have to leave something behind, because it says the first you're taking, the rachis, both by truma and by challah, so if, that means first and there's something left behind, if you try to give it all away, it won't work, which is why, for example, in the Mishnah and Peah, which we say in the Birchas Torah every morning, El Dvarim She'elam Shior, these things don't have a Shior, you don't mention Truma. Even though Truma has no minimum and has no maximum, there is a maximum. It's 99.99999%. You can't give 100%. So that's why. Okay. Mishnah Perek Beis. Have a good Shabbos. When you have to leave, just you have to go. Okay, so now the most mitzvahs that are Tali Ba'at, all mitzvahs that are tali ba'aretz, that means they depend on agricultural law. Tali ba'aretz doesn't mean land on Eretz Yisrael, it means on the ground. So they're applicable midoraisa only in Eretz Yisrael. However, there's some funny exceptions. Challah is one of them, where what we're focusing on, it's true, challah is only nogea midoraisa in Eretz Yisrael. However, it is not where the grain came from, but where the dough is made. Because challah only kicks in, and we'll see it time and time again, as though challah only emerges as a chiyuv once you mix the water and flour together. So if you do that mixing outside of Eretz Yisrael and then bring the dough in, it'll be putter. And same goes, if you mix the dough in Eretz Yisrael and put it in a freezer and send it to America, it's chayav in America. So it doesn't matter where the grain grew, it matters where the dough is made. So it says inside here, peros chutz la'aretz, if you have foreign non-Israeli produce, shenichnus la'aretz, and you bring it into Eretz Yisrael, meaning as wheat. Then chayav in b'challah. Since you'll prepare it into dough in Eretz Yisrael, it's chayav in b'challah. Now, yatzo mikan l'sham, if you remove it from here, meaning from Eretz Yisrael, that's where the tana is from here, and this tana is from that, from Eretz Yisrael. If you remove the grain from here, Eretz Yisrael, l'sham, and send it to New York, Rabbi Eliezer mechayav. Rabbi Eliezer says, so what? It still came from Eretz Yisrael and your chayav, not like what I told you. And Rabbi Akiva Poter, he says, no, it matters where you knead it and make it to dough, and that's the din. Okay? Rabbi Eliezer agrees with the first part, that where you knead it into dough is where it's mechayev, but he says, anyways, if it's Paris or it's Yisrael, it's chayev anyways, I don't care if you knead it elsewhere. Yeah. Halach is like Rabbi Akiva. Mishnah Beis, strange case here. The case is you have a boat, and the boat is got like a plant, like flower bed, like in the boat, in like the hull of the ship, okay? And it's a boat that has, so the soil comes from Chutz La'aretz, but the boat found its way onto the Jordan River, okay? It's in there, loved off, it's in Eretz Yisrael on a river. The Jordan River, I guess, is the only real contender, okay? Or the Galilee, Sea of Galilee, but there's a boat floating around, okay? So the question is, since it's the soil itself, literally, is from Chutz La'aretz, and it's not attached now to the ground here.
What if it's on here in the Yom, the Mediterranean?
Someone asked me yesterday, I'm not sure the halachas of where Eretz Yisrael begins, into the ocean, if at all. I just don't know. I mean, anyone can know. I don't really answer that question.
The tough part is the Jordan River is not much of a river.
I understand. I understand. Okay, it's bigger. By the way, you should know, the reason why it's a pathetic river today is because they dam it. They have a dam in the Kinneret.
It's destroying the whole system and everything.
Yeah, that's why also the Dead Sea is disappearing, and so because it's a water system, they don't want it to run down. They dam it. But even so, the Jordan was a much more impressive river once upon a time. But it's not one of the great rivers. Like when you even in those days, it was not like today, like a little. Yeah, it's not a Euphrates or a Nile. It never was. But anyways, it was bigger back then. Point is, if you have a boat floating in the water in Eretz Yisrael, wherever it is, so it's the dirt came from Chutz La'aretz, and it's not even attached to the ground here. So do we look at it as being Eretz Yisrael? So we're going to end up saying it is like Eretz Yisrael, but to make that work, the Mefarshim are going to say that we're talking about a boat, a very strange case. A boat, see, if the hull of the ship would be like, you know, fiberglass hull or whatever, a steel hull, wouldn't fiberglass back then, obviously, so that's mafsik. It's like, that's called that's a atzitz chain runakl, but it's like a flower pot that has any holes in it, so that's not considered attached to the ground. So the case that the Mefarshim explain is that it's a boat, where the hull of the ship, like the plants, I guess, there's holes in the boat, which sounds a little mad, and the hull's been blocked up with like earth. You can't ask me how that would work. It sounds bizarre to me. But the point is, since there's a hole in the boat, so in that case we've seen other times also, that's considered to like nourish through all the dirt to the ground, and it'll be attached there to Israel. That's the case. inside here. It's a strange case. So it says, Mishnah Beis, Afar Chutz La'aretz, you have foreign soil, Shabab Bisfina La'aretz, and it came on a boat into Eretz Yisrael. Chaya B'maishas B'Shvias, once in Eretz Yisrael, so whatever grows in that boat, since it's got soil that's attached, conceptually attached to Eretz Yisrael, and Chazal looked at it as it's nourishing from the ground still somehow. So it's Chayav and Maestras, and it's Chayav and Shvias. On the seventh year, it'd be Chayav, as opposed to Chutz La'aretz produce, which is no Shvias problems. Amr Yehuda, Amos, Rabbi Yehuda says, when does this apply? That's Bizman Shasfina Gosheshes. He says, wait a second. We're only talking about not if the Sfina's, the boat is floating in the water. That's a little much. It has to be that it's like, you know, run aground. So it's in a boat, but it's like there's a, you know, it's connected to the ground because it's the hull of the ship is stuck to the bed, the riverbed, whatever it is. Now, we have a klal that we've seen many times before from a Gemara in Erev and Pei Beis. It says that when Rabbi Yehuda says Amosai, he's coming to just explain what the Tanna Kamma meant, not coming to argue. But for whatever reasons, there's a machlokas and mafarshim, because there's a problem. In the Yerushalmi, it seems they're having machlokas. What could he do? So there's a machlokas in the mafarshim Mishnah, whether or not, in this case, Rabbi Yehuda is arguing, which is pretty unusual for an Amosai, or if he's just explaining. So the Rambam rules like Rabbi Yehuda, which sounds like the usual rule, but the Rush, usually the Bar Tanura goes like the Rush heavily, he learns that the halach is the Tanna Kamma, meaning he learns it's the machlokas from Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda, and which is strange, and he's passing like the Tanna Kamma, which will be the din, of course. Shalom Aleichem. I was trying to get a hold of you, just see if you're okay. You're okay. Okay, that's good. And Donnie fine also, he's okay.
Good.
Okay. So we're holding now. Oh, sorry. So now we're holding in the middle of base in Challah. It's like a new point. If I be editing the Mishnah, I make a new Mishnah here, okay? It's like a new world.
You see, though, how it's attached to the ground, because there's a hole in the boat, and it's filled with earth, and the water gets to the earth gets moist.
Right, exactly.
So it's...
Exactly. It's not so far. Just, yeah. It's not... Yep. Okay. Now we're in the middle, we're in the second half of the... Second half of the second Mishnah, the second Perek, and it's a new point here. It says, Isa shenilusha b'mei peros. If you have dough that was kneaded with mei peros. Mei peros means fruit juice. But really in the Mishnah, mei peros is a code word. It means any liquid that's not from the seven liquids that convey tuma. That's like the code word for it. So the point is here, right? Mei peros means apple juice, but it could also mean eggs. That's my point. Egg whites are considered mei peros in the Mishnah talk. Okay, so don't take it as literally. It has to be, you know, pomegranate juice that you poured in. So the Mishnah says chayeves b'challah. It's enough to consider to make it challah, and as it combines the flour. However, v'ne'achalas b'yadayim mesuavos. There's no problem with eating it with hands that haven't been washed in the pans that are tummy. Now, this, the explanation here to understand what's really going on here is a little complicated. I'll try to make it very brief and straightforward. The issue is when you're talking about flour and water, you're talking about water connecting lots of particulate matter, lots of little pieces. So I'll talk tumah for a second first. When it comes to tumah, you have lots of disparate pieces that haven't been touching. It's not like, you know, conduct electricity. If tumah touches one, in other words, on this table here, if I touch this, if I'm a tumah this piece of paper, so that piece of paper doesn't become tumah because of that. And the table, sure not. They're touching, so what? This might be, if I'm saying avi avos, maybe I'll make this into an avatumah, this into a rishon tumah, but it's like going down each time. And this table is not even susceptible to past rishon, so the table says tahor. Whereas, if I'm talking about a table which is a single entity, the fact that it has like metal legs and a wooden countertop, if I be touching the tabletop, I'm and make it into a rishon, though of course the metal legs and the screws and the legs, all that stuff becomes a rishon, because it's one table in different parts. So there's all mesechas kelim, all 30 prakam, to define what makes something into a kli, and there's a whole mesechas. There's a lot. Looks like there's a lot of issues exactly where things begin and end. But the point is, if things are just touching, but they're not a single system, single unit, they're not considered to be one thing. So, for example, if you have we've seen this pressed figs a bunch of times. If you have pressed figs, so it's really just 10 figs squished together. So if you touch one fig, tumah doesn't convey to the whole loaf of figs. Just that fig that you touch becomes tummy. Right? It's like, and each one would step down if there's more tumah to go. So when it comes to flour, you really got a lot of little pieces of, you know, of wheat all lumped together. So the question is, was that considered a single mass, like dough, and you touch one end, the whole thing becomes tummy? Or no, by touching one end, all you've done is you've been tummy the few pieces you touch, that little tiny bit that's directly touching your finger, but the rest still remains tahor. Okay? Now, there's a machlokas if things that are not able to machshila kabul tumah, I mean those seven liquids that can, that you need to wet something to convey tumah. Is machlokas if you use something other than those things as a, so to speak, glue to connect things together, like egg whites, let's say, if that can be, if that glue, so to speak, can convey, can be enough to convey tumah. You follow? In other words, so the one sheet is, listen, let's talk dough now. When you take flour and mush it together, so it's clumped into one dough, it's obviously acting as a glue. What are you talking about? Another sheet is, if it's not one of the, if the liquid you poured in wasn't one of the seven species, it's not sufficiently a glue to convey tumah. Okay? That's one issue. Is it or isn't it? The second issue is, when it comes to challah, so it can't be, it needs to be a single dough. It can't be lots of little pieces. So when you wet it with water, we say it like merges into one thing. The question is a machlokas also, if the same rule for challah is learned out from conveying from the tumah glue, so to speak, and therefore if you use a liquid other than one of the seven liquids that convey tumah as your liquid inside the dough, that will allow it to be connected for the sake of challah. There's actually machlokas across the board, but our mishnah is poskening like a kind of what might be like the two different sheets together, or maybe not. How the sheets work out is actually very complicated in this Mishnah. But however it is, the Mishnah is poskening chayevus b'challah, meaning it's poskening that if you use apple juice to make dough, that's enough to glue it to a single mass, and it's considered one dough, not lots of little pieces. However, it's not enough to convey tumah between the pieces. So if you, every time you touch the dough in one place, so the rest of the dough remains tahor, and since you have the actual number of grains, obviously, is infinitesimal to create the touching hand, create the total number of grains in the batch. So every time you do it, it's going to be bottle. So the tumah will never convey. Remember, tumah, to convey tumah, you need to have a kazayas. A kabeitza. A kabeitza's piece. So you'll never, like, convey tumah beyond anything, because whatever you're touching, not a kabeitza worth. So, like, as you touch it, those pieces, they're not settled tumah, nothing happens. So, but I said actually it's not correct. It's not pshat that it's bottle. Just the tumah never conveys, because they're little, each little piece not settled to tumah. It's too small. And that's how the Mishnah poskens. So it says, Chayavas b'challah, it's one dough and chayav and challah. However, Nechalas b'yadayim musuavos, you can use hands you didn't wash for because no way to convey tumah because the pieces are too small. It's not considered one cohesive piece. Okay, Mishnah Gimel. Ha'isha yoshevas v'kotza chalas aruma. Now, let me explain it first. There's a bracha you say when you take challah, Asher Kedushah B'Mitzvosav Tzivano, L'Hafrish Challah, or L'Hafrish Challah Min Ha'isa, two girsos. Either way, you can't make a bracha if you're naked. You have to have your erva covered. So now, normally erva we talk about by Davar Shebe Kedusha, you can't be exposed to any erva, a tefach in front of you. But for your own bracha, we saw, for example, the Mishnah brachas in the Chazar, we saw a guy can say Kriya Shema in the mikveh, not a problem, as long as there's a hefsek libel, his heart doesn't see his air of his private parts. So when it comes to your own brachas, as long as your genitals are covered, you're good to go, you can make a bracha. In fact, if you're wearing a loincloth, the rest of you is naked, and so what, you can make a bracha. So by a woman, we say she can sit down, shoshevis, v'kotza chalasa, and she can remove her chala, aruma, even though she's naked, then she can say a bracha, because a woman, the way she's built, if she sits down on the ground with her legs in front of her, and like the hamstrings are flat on the ground, so like her underside is totally covered up, like smushed against the ground, hidden away. So that's considered covered. The fact that like her buttocks is exposed doesn't matter. That's not considered the genitals, that would be a problem. But a man, so it says, Mipnei she yichol l'chasas atma. She can cover herself by sitting flat on the ground, so then she's covered. Avaloa ish, a man can't do that because a man's genitals aren't covered when he sits, they're exposed, and therefore it won't work. And a new point. Mishenu yachol l'asos isaso b'tahara. Now what happens if a person can't make his dough in tahara for whatever reason? So he's gonna, when he makes challah, the challah is gonna be tamei. Let's say bezman hazeh, we're all tamei meis. So the question is, what's better? Do we say the guy should make doughs in less than, remember it's 5/4 kav is the requisite amount of flour. So do we say make it kav, meaning make it one, maybe less than the full amount that's requisite to be mechayev and challah, and therefore none of his doughs will have a chiv of challah, and therefore will never even be tamei challah. Is that better? Or do we say no? There's a mitzvah to take challah, do it like you're supposed to do. Okay, you're matama, so you're matama. What are you going to do? That's the question. The answer is the Tanakhama here. It says, Yasena Kabin. The Tanakhama says make it in small amounts, and therefore, you'll never come to create a chiv of challah, v'yasena betumah, you'll never come to metama challah, because you won't have any challah to take. Rabbi Kiva disagrees. He says, yasena betumah. He says, so what? Make a betumah, v'yasena betkab. V'yasena kabman. Don't make it in small amounts. He says, make it in tumah and you'll have, do it in big amounts, don't avoid the chiv, and you'll be metame. And so what? You give it to Kohen, it's tame. Like that's ain b'ira, you have no choice in the matter. Don't avoid the mitzvah. Ukeshem shu kora letahora, kachu kora letameya. It doesn't matter. Just you call it challah. If it needs challah, you call it challah, whether it's tahor or tameh. Lazukor challah b'shem, lazukor challah b'shem. You call it when you're mafresh it, either you l'shem or b'shem, like yourselves. But basically, the point is you just act as normal, whether it's tahor or tameh. Aval kabim, if you do it in kabim less than the proper shear, ein lem chelik b'shem. Then there's no way to. There's no portion that you can call challah because it's not chi, m'challah, you'd be avoiding the mitzvah, which we don't want. Mishnah Dalet. Now, what happens if you have batches of dough less than the requisite amount, the 5/4, but you put them together in a tray? So it says, yisaso kabim, you have two kav doughs. V'nago b'zeh b'zeh. They're touching in the tray, but they didn't make them together, they just put them together for baking. So patura min challah, still, it's two separate batches and they're not challah. Ad shiyishchu. Yishchu means like till they bite each other. That means that when you take the two loaves and separate them again, they're so intertwined that one will pull the other away with it, some of it away with it. If you have experience, like with pull apart challahs, if you make pull apart challahs, so when they bake, of course, they make. But when they're sitting in the pan, they're like still, they're touching, smushed together, they're all 12 bowls, but it doesn't matter, you can pull one bowl and they come clean by itself. That would be, but if each bowl is less than a less than 5/4 carbon, the whole huge mega challah still is potter. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. He says, af harode v'nos in the sal, even if you made them totally separate batches, but you put them into the oven, and when you pull them out of the oven, the two loaves, each a kav worth in size, you put them into the same radia, means to remove from the oven, bread, lasal into a basket, so now they're together. Hasal mitzarfen lachala. If you put two kav amounts in the basket together, now they end up in the same basket, we consider it was a single batch, and the whole thing is kav lachala. You have to take challah from the baked bread.
That's what we do for matzah.
And that's the din. The din is like Rabbi Eliezer, exactly. The sal, the basket is mitzaref, it combines it. You do a matzah, shouldn't delay and fiddle with it. You want a chomet flying around, obviously. You
pull it. Apparently there's a halacha that you're not allowed to make enough dough at one time that's chayv and challah. They're afraid that you won't be able to make it all in time. So what they do is, at the end, they have these special shmur matzah, like round matzah racks. They're really about the length of this table. And they fill it up, and they take it and put it on a table that has a lip around it. It's like every single form possible. And then they cover it with a...
They combine it and take challah like that.
Tablecloth, and then they take
challah
with the
bracha. Very interesting. Okay, there you go. So, that's the din. Now, there's a machlokas, by the way, if the loaves in the basket need to be touching or not. That, to be serious, they need to just physically touch. Yeah. Mishnah Hay. Now, flour. We're talking about flour, and flour is not chayv and challah. You need to have water first. So, there's a mafresh challah, so kemach. If you take challah from it, but it's still just flour with no water yet, in a challah. It's like, you did nothing. And if you gave it to a Kohen and he doesn't give it back to you, the gazal biyad Kohen. The Kohen stealing is that he's a thief. Like it's not his, he has to give it back to you. And if he doesn't, it's going to be bad news because you're going to think you took challah, but you really didn't, and you won't take challah again, and your whole food will be a misbedei shemaim. Bad news. Okay. Now, ha'isa atzma. Now, if you gave the Kohen flour, sorry, what's left after you gave it, if you gave the Kohen flour, what's left is the of the dough is still chayv and challah again because you didn't take challah the first time. V'kemach, and the flour you gave to the Kohen, if you gave him 5/4 of a kav of flour, in yeshba kashior, there's enough there, chayav es b'challah. The Kohen himself would have to take challah. We said he has to give it back to you, but if he didn't give it back to you, so if he makes bread out of that, it's chayv and challah because the whole thing is like, didn't do anything. V'asur b'lazarim. Now, this is a side point. The Tana here holds, Rabbi Yeshua, that if you give flour to a Kohen, he has to give it back to you. But when he gives it back to you, Rabbi Yeshua says, it's a chumrah, midrabanan, you shouldn't eat that flour if you're not a Kohen. Because it looks funny. It looks funny, like you sort of gave something as challah, you get it back, and now you're eating it. And people should get confused about not eating challah and eating truma, so now we won't let you eat anymore, you should sell it to a Kohen. That's Rabbi Yeshua Shita. The Chacham disagree, Amr lo, Masa, once it happened, kafasha zakin zar, a certain zakin, literally old person, it means like a chacham who's a zar, who wasn't a kohen, kafasha, he grabbed it and he ate it, and it was the flour that was returned to a non-kohen, he ate it no problem. So you see, it's not a problem, they bring a raya from that zakin, it's not a problem to eat flour that was returned to a Yisrael. Amr Lahem, Rabbi Yeshua says, that's no proof at all. Afu kilkil la'atma. Yeah, and you know what? That guy's going to burn for that, what he did. He messed himself up. Fine, he did it, but that was a mistake. And now he is over the Durabanan. However, on the bright side, v'tikin la'acherim, Rabbi Yeshua concedes that since he did that mistake and everyone knows about it, everyone has a good excuse. So the punishment, so to speak, for eating flour that was returned, that was given accidentally to a Kohen as chal and then returned to a Yisrael, to eat that flour, like, you're not supposed to do it, but if you do, like, you can sort of blame, people have a good excuse because they, for not knowing the halacha properly. That's why it's a mitigating factor in their onesh. Strange. Okay. Mishnah Vav here now gives us the shear. We didn't know until now. Chameshus Ravim Kema Chayav Mechala. You need 5/4 of a kav, if you want, is Chayav Mechala. It comes out to being, the range of shear was, like, say, 1.2 to 1.6 on the lenient side, up to like 2.25 kilos of flour on the machmer side, right? Haim, what do you include in the shear? Haim, the actual flour, usa'oran, any, if you added sa'or, that's a sourdough, into the dough to make it ferment, we call yeast, right? Vesuban, and also any of the fine bran, umursnan, and the coarse bran, right? All that stuff mixed in. Chameshus, revoim, chayav. And if all that adds up to 5/4 of a kav, then the whole thing is chayav. Now, nitel mursin metochen, if you sifted it and took out the coarse bran, which is totally not really edible, out. V'chaz letocha, now you put it as an additive to thicken it up, to, you know, make more for less, like putting, like, you know, like in the camps, they used to put sawdust inside their bread and stuff like that, to make it bulkier. So then, v'chaz letocha, and it doesn't count. Hare elu paturin. If you haven't got 5/4 without the morsan added back in, it's like putting sandpaper in, putting up sawdust inside. It doesn't count. You know, so if it was in there and you didn't take it out, it's a bottle to the mixture. Once you remove it, to put it back in, it doesn't count. Okay? Yeah. Zayin. How much do you take from your dough? Shira chala, the amount you take for chala, is echad me'esrim v'arba, 1/24. 1/24. The derivation is a little complicated if you remember. We'll just take it as a fact. Today. 1/24, that's for retail. If you're making it as a private person. If you're making it to sell, we'll see in a second, it's 1/48. And the Mishnah will say now. I'm sorry, I meant private. Sorry. Well, if you make it for private use, it's 1/24. If you make it for sale, it's 1/48. That's, sorry. Yeah. Ha'osa isa, so if you make it for yourself, your dough. Va'osa la mishta b'no, even if you're making an enormous quantity. So, and because you're making it for your kid's wedding, so you have, like, you know, a huge, like, a vat of flour. Even so, echad me'esrim v'arba, take it 1/24. Because you have to give a reasonable amount called kedein asinah, because the pasuk said v'nesato, you'll give it. So they learn. So they said one of the uniform standard. Private usage, a 1/24 is a reasonable amount. A nachtum, a baker. Now he's making, like, commercially. Shu os limkor b'shuk, since it's for sale, we're more lenient. And similarly, v'chena isha, if you have a woman, she's a private person, but she's also limkor b'shuk, but she's making it for sale, or more lenient, and the standard is echad me'arbarim mishmona, 1/48 of the loaf, just over 2% of the dough, I should say, goes to challah. Okay. Nitmes isasa shogeges. If on accident, when she was making her dough, the woman, before she took challah, she made a tummy. So now a kohen can't eat it anyways. So, O anusa, or if instead of being a shogeg means it was she didn't mean to do it. An onus means, like, she may have known what she was doing when she was metame, but she had no choice in the matter. Like bezman hazeh, she knows full well when she makes dough she's going to be metame, but she has no choice because she can't be metaheres herself. So an anusa, somebody against her control. So then we're lenient and we say in that kind of dough.
It's a good show that she's tame.
Yeah, or she can't be metaheres herself. I don't know, someone put a gun to her head and said, you touch the dough now. But it's a shogeg is means that, like, I didn't realize the time. Right. But onus means not your will. You didn't want it to happen. So then we're lenient, and we say, since it's going to get burned anyways, because a kohen can't eat it, echad me'arbarim mishmona, let we have the private person be more lenient and say, like the commercial usage, 1/48. Nitmes mezida, but if she said, I couldn't care less about tuma, and she's metameis it, so then echad me'esrim v'arba, even though it's going to be burned, we still make her give a full 1/24, Kadesh lo yehe chota niskar. So the sinner shouldn't benefit. Like, we don't want her to. You know, fine. Mishnah, she wouldn't make it this a loophole for her. Okay, Mishnah Ches. Rabbi Eliezer is talking about.
What does all of them think that someone who is so, you know, spiteful like that is going to care so much about taking the challah b'chazo?
Well, I guess, I mean, b'mezid, it's not like she's like a. She just can't be bothered. Look, she's a Yisraelis. She lives in Beit Shemesh, b'zman that there's a Beit Shemesh. Like, just, I don't know. No, I mean, those days, I'm saying. And like, the mikvah is hard to go to. It's a pain to go to the mikvah. So she's like, so I'll have tummy bread. So big deal, I have tummy bread. What do I care? You're allowed to have tummy bread. So in that case, we don't let her say, oh, then you get on the hook and you eat more bread that way. We say, but she's like, she's not supposed to do that. She's being a naughty girl because she's being tameh of the challah, and that's usher. But I'm saying, you know, I'm a ratzim. We're not letting her get away with it. Because normal bread. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Mishnah Ches. Now, so if you remember back in the previous parak, we said that you need to have mukaf. That means it has to be close together. And therefore we said, since it has to be close together, the rabbi said, you shouldn't take tahor and tameh, take challah from tahor dough and tameh dough, lest they are put together, close together, and one is matama the other, since you don't let the matama challah. So here Rabbi Eliezer is going to pick up on argue with that point back then, and he's going to allow you, he's going to say, what's the big deal? Just be careful. It's not a big deal to keep the two from touching. So he says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, he tell us min a tower ala tame. He says, no problem, you can take tower and tame, it's not a big deal. He rejects that rabbinic extension. However, there's a problem. The problem is, mukaf requires only them in the same room. Mukaf requires they should be in the same room. However, if there's a reason why you should be makbid, they shouldn't touch, so then, which in the case of tumantara is the case, so then it's not considered mukaf unless they actually are touching. But then, whoa. That's a nasty circle. If you have to let them touch to get away the issue of mukaf, once they touch, then you are talking matamit, so then it's not going to work, because the whole reason the rabbi said not to do it is lest they become tameh. Rabbi Eliezer isn't allowing you to be matamit your bread, your challah. He's just saying, be careful. So if that's the case, ketzer, how's it going to work it out that you can have your challah and your tameh and tahor touching and yet not convey the tumah? So he's got a very clever trick. You recall that less than a kibetz of anything, of a bread, a dough, is not makabel tumah. So what he says is this, ketzad, isa tahora ve'isa tameh. You have two batches of dough, one is tahor, one is tameh. No tokadei chala me'isa. You take an amount of chala that you require, like, you know, whatever it's going to be, your chala, that your, what we're going to call your will be chala, like the 1/24th. Me'isa shlohurma chalasa, that from the dough that hadn't yet taken chala yet. The notes and pachas, so you put that, you have two loaves, your Torah and Tameh loaves, right, look here. So now what you do is this, you take from your Torah loaf, you take what's going to be the challah, you put it over here, right, this page over here, now is my challah thing. And then you take also another piece, less than a kibetzah, and you put it over here. So you got a train, you have your dough, your challah, a little piece less than a kibetzah, which can't be makabel tumah, and over here, you've got your tameh, it's like a train, all touching now. All touching, but no tumah can go across this gap because there's a small piece in the middle. That's the idea. So you say, Noto kadei chala me'isa, shalo hurma chalasa, you put a piece over here. Minos and pachas me'kabetza, you put over here, less than a kabetza's worth, ba'emza, in between the batches. Kadei shayito min a mukaf, that way they can all be touching and you can make mukaf without having to have them convey the tumah. V'cham osum, they say, no way. You can see where this is going. This is a tumah disaster waiting to happen, so we're not letting you do this. Okay, and fine, a pair of gimel here. Ochlin arai mina isa. You're allowed to, you know, like same as truma, you can have achilas arai, you can have a snack on your dough. Achit is gagal b'chitim, until you've made it to fully, in other words, when you pour water in, it's not considered chayav and chala formally yet, because it's not fully mixed. When it comes to chitin, you need to have tisgalgel. Gilgal means like fully kneaded up, fully mixed. So if it's not fully mixed, the chitin is the flour that's made of wheat flour is exempt. V'timtem b'sa'orim. When it comes to sa'orim, barley flour, the shear is different. When it comes to wheat, simply mixing up well water and flour will make a dough. However, when it comes to flours that are made out of other of the grains, barley is an example here, but it's true also, says the Yerushalmi, for spelt, oats, rye. If you mix it with water, like it doesn't like gel into a single mass well. That doesn't go. Like, I don't know, if you imagine grinding up, I'm imagining, my rice, I'm familiar with rice more. Like, if you imagine, wetting rice wet together, like, when I think of wet rice, it's not sushi rice, it's not very glutinous rice. So then, like, you're like, you know, it's a big lump, but it's like not really a dough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, so if you're gonna make,
noodles.
Yeah, you know, it's like it mushes together, but it's not really one mass like flour like we're used to for our bread. So that's the case when you're gonna make, if you're gonna make a loaf out of those kind of grains, not don't get confused. Rice isn't one of the grains. I'm just familiar with rice, so I'm telling it. You like pack it down. It's like, you know, it's like a tray. It's like a mold that'll make the bread. So as you pack it into the mold, that's the Gemara Melacha for it. So you have to go, packing is required. Timtem means like to make it like flatten and smooth it out. You have to pack it into the mold, or it's, yeah, tumtum. A tumtum is someone whose genitalia is unknown because he has like a smooth flap of skin that covers it. So, you know, it's internal, right? Or tumtum es alev, it like blocks off your heart. And even the word tuma, according to most, is related to that because it makes you tuma, someone that makes you like sort of like opaque to light or kedusha, whatever it is. It's closed off. So that's it. It's like you have to smooth it off. Okay. The modern even with tum-tum, I think, means someone who's like very, like his brain is blocked, you know, not working, stupid. So the point is, you can eat arai until you've finished making it into dough formally, which is gilgul, fully, just, you know, fully mixed water and fully kneaded, with a K, kneaded, for wheat flour. So gilgula b'chitim, v'timtima b'sorim, if once you've done the, made it into fully dough, you've kneaded the wheat flour or you've packed in the barley flour. Even that dough, now you're chayav misa because it's challah there already. Challah is chayav to be taken. So you can eat a rye before, but once it's finished, don't dare take it because it's serious business. Kevin shunosen es amayim. Once you poured water in, magbas challah. So that's the earliest time you can take challah, is from when the water pours in, even before gilgul. But there's water and flour together. You can take challah, magbas, lift up challah from that little bit that's mixed together. And the rabbis here are saying that's when you should do it. So even though min haTorah, the proper time to do it would be when it's fully mixed. But since b'di'evad you'll be yotzi, as soon as the water pours in, the Tana here is saying as soon as the water pours in, immediately take it away. The reason why is we're afraid, since it's an iser to be matama your challah, and it's now wet and ready, it's going to become tummy, anything could happen, so just get it out of the way as soon as possible. B'zman hazeh, since we're tummy anyways, this fear is not a fear, it's a certainty. Therefore the halacha refers back to being, you shouldn't take challah until it's fully needed. The exception is if when you poured in your water into your flour, if there's still a full shear, 5/4 of a kav of flour beneath the water, if you took challah now, you can only exempt the top part. And now when you mix water down below, you'll make a new batch of dough, essentially. It's chayiv, so that makes no sense. So don't take challah until less than 5/4 of flour are left unmixed with water. Okay. Okay, Mishnah base now. The next Mishnahs, from the next five Mishnahs from base to Vav, are all the same principle, okay? We'll do the Mishnahs chick-chock. The principle is the critical moment called Gilgal, when you make it into dough, when you kneaded it. Before that, it's not chayiv. And after that, it's not chayiv. The chayiv is only if it's eligible for challah at the moment you do Gilgal, when you make it into dough. So we've seen the pasuk says, Ariso Seichem, your dough. So if you weren't Jewish when you made it, or it's owned by a non-Jew, or it's owned by the Beis HaMikdash at the time, that critical moment when it's needed, then it'll be exempt. If it's Hefker, it'll be exempt. Okay? Even if previously it had been Hefker, or after that it'll become Hekdash, it doesn't matter. If at the minute you make it into dough, it's Chayiv, because yours is probably owned by a Jew, Chayiv, and if not, Pater. That's the oldest Mishnah here. So it says, okay, so the first principle was about Tuma. Actually, we talked first about Dimua and Tuma. Dimua again is the mixture of chulin with your challah. So nidma isasa, if your dough became dimua, meaning that some truma fell into it, okay? Achlo gilgala, if you hadn't yet kneaded it, then it will become pater, because when you do knead it, it'll be a mixture of chulin and truma. And since the pasuk learned from psukim says you should take the truma out of it, so if there's truma already in it, like take it out and it will be truma. So if there's truma already there, it's not fully. But you take out isn't fully truma, some new, because some of the radius truma, so learn from pasuk it's exempt. So again, if it fell in before you did gilgul, pater, right? She ha meduma pater, because if it's meduma, meaning a mixture of chalin, of truma and chulin, it's pater, like we said. Umisha gilgula, if first you already needed it when some truma fell in, so it's still chayev, it's still have to take the chal out because it's chayev. The chayev kicked in, the chayev kicked in. Similarly, like, I don't know, parallelly, Nolad but la safek, tuma. If a safek fell into the dough, the flour, the kemach, became safek tame. You know, if some of the tame touched one of the two bowls, which one it was, Archlo Gilgala, and you hadn't yet mixed it up together. So then it never kicked in as being Chala yet. So therefore we say Tase Betuma. He says, so what? Make it in Tuma. We have no fear, no problem, because if it's Suffolk and we're not afraid of Tuma. Mishal Gilgala, however, if you've done Gilgala already and now it's a batch of dough, so now maybe there now it was Chayv and Chala, maybe. And if you're Matama the Chala, so you're not, if it's you're not allowed to Matama Chala. And since now the Chala is certainly there, so you have to now Tatsa Batara, you have to make it Tahara. And in the first case, what will happen is you do it, you make it Tuma Vadai by touching it, even though it was only Suffolk before, by doing it, Tuma will become Tuma Vadai. That's actually in effect helping the Kohen, because you give the Kohen and he can burn it. Whereas in the second case here, if you made it into Chala already, and that is possibly Chala, you can't be Matama Chala, that's not allowed, right? So you have to be afraid that maybe this Suffolk is not there, really, it's Tahor. You have to do B'Tahara, but when you give it to the Kohen, his hands are tied. He can't eat it because it's still Suffolk, it's Tameh. But he can't burn it because you made it Tahor, maybe it's Tahor. Now, Mishnah Gimel here, the cases are going to be that you're going to be Makdish your Chala in three phases, essentially, Makdish your dough. The first case will be you're Makdish it inside. Higdisha Isasa, you're Makdish your dough. Ajlo Gilgala, before you needed it. So I'm calling it dough, really, it's flour. Right? Upadasa, and then you redeem it. All before you need it. The fact that it had passed through the base of Makdish's hands for a time, so what? When you needed it, it was in your hands, and it's therefore Chayavis. And similarly, if Mishal Gilgala, after you needed it, and it's a Chayav, you then, missing word here, you're machdishit, so you have to base mikdash as chayav, do chayav and chala, upadata, and then you redeem it from the base of mikdash. So since, who cares, when it was chayav and chala, it was in your hands, chayavis. However, the middle case is, higdishata, if she was mikadeshet, she made her flour and water, so this is the base of mikdash's property, and then, achlo gilgala, before she mixed it, the gilgala, gizbar, now the base of mikdash's man comes, and he needs it, the flour and water together, makes it into dough, and then vacha kach badata, and then after that she goes and redeems it as dough, flour and water together. So then it's ptura, it'll be exempt. Why? Shebishas chovasa, at the moment the chiyuv kicked in of making it dough, haitza ptura, it was patur because it was in the gizbar's hands. Okay, mishadal kiyotzibo, keyword slang for going off topic for a second, but the similar principle applies when it comes to taking hafrashas, trumas and maestras. Remember, there was a phase when trumas and maestras kick in. Now, let me say that outside first. It's just a little confusing because of the words in the Mishnah. The earliest time that you can take hafrashas from food is called onas and maestras. That's the time of being tied. You know, and we saw in maestras, we learned, that was basically when it's like minimally edible. For grain, it's a third of its growth. Okay, but when it starts to turn red, with different examples. Okay, now, you could take, but you don't have to take. Once you get to go to Gemar Malacha, finishing the processing, now you definitely have to take, right? In the middle, it's optional. It's not chayv yet. No, we had lots of nafkaminas. Okay, so we're not in our Mishnah. It's going to use both terms. It'll use both what's called onus amayshus, and it'll also use nigra malachta. The Mefarshim all agree that whatever time period they're talking about in the Mishnah, it's the same time period, and one of the terms are love dafka. It's either the Tana is talking about when it said onus amaisris, it really meant gemar malacha, or when it said nigmar, it really meant onus amaisris. Just was lav dafka. Everyone agrees on that. The machlokas and the mafarshim just is which of the two periods they're referring to. But either way, it's a bit of an academic machlokas because all the mafarshim agree that if it was in the hands of the base of mikdash, either at onus amaisris or at gemar malacha, so it'll be pater from hafrashas. So that's the shot outside, meaning trumas and maestras. So in other words, if the gizmer had it in any of the time between, if they get it, as it clicks into onus and maestras or it clicks into marmalacha in their hands, it's exempt. So now it says kiyotzibo, similar idea. Hamakdish perosav, if a person is makdish to the base of mikdash, his produce, achlo bol onus and maestras, before the chiyav kicked in. Upadan, and then he redeems it before the chiyav kicked in. Then he finished it in his hands, so then chayavin, so it'll be chayav because it kicked in his hands. And similarly, mishabol onus amaisras, if already the chayav had kicked in, then he goes and is makdish it, who cares? Padan, and when he goes and redeems it, chayav, and after he'll have to take his hafrashas because the chayav already kicked in. However, higdishin achlo nigmaru, if he was makdish before they finished reaching the point of being chayav, right? And then Ugamar and Gizbar, and they became to the point of either Onus Maestras or Gamar Malach in the hands of the Gizbar. He's the one who did the smoothing over the pile, let's say. So now the Chiyav would have kicked in, but since it was in his hand, it's exempt. Bachakach Padan, then someone comes and buys it and redeems it, the Kedusha. Patur, and there's no Chiyav to take Afrashas then. Shebashas Chavasan, because the time the Chiyav was to take Afrashas, Chayav Patur, and they were exempt because they were in the hands of the Beis HaMikdash. Similarly, hey, the same principle as before. A non-Jew, a Nachri, Shnasan Yisrael La'asos Lo Isa. If a non-Jew gives a woman, and the non-Jewish man says that, actually it comes out that a non-Jewish man to a Jewish man, actually, whatever. The non-Jewish man gives flour and water to a Jewish man to make from dough. Patur min achala, it's exempt from challah because the dough doesn't belong to the Jew, it belongs to the goy, and it's not Jewish dough. Natna lo matana. What happens if in the middle of the kneading of the, you know, while the guy's preparing the dough, while the Jew's preparing the dough for the non-Jew says, you know what, you could have it. So now it depends. Archel Gilgal, if he hadn't yet done Gilgal on it, so now Chayev, because when he does Gilgal and kneads it together, it'll be his dough, the Jew's dough, and it's Chayev. Umisha Gilgal, but if he'd already kneaded it before the non-Jew gave it as a gift, Potter, then it's exempt, because at the time that it was Chayev, it was not Jewish dough. Ha'osa Isa Imanachri. What happens if you're making a dough, a joint venture of two people's dough, a non-Jew and a Jew together in the same batch? So, Im ein b'shel Yisrael k'shir chala, if the Jewish portion is less than 5/4 of a kav, and it's got the shir for chala, in fact the whole dough collectively is more than 5/4, who cares? Paturim and chala, we only focus on the Jewish part. Again, the Jewish, we essentially look at it as two separate doughs. And Mishtavav, same story. A gerish nizgar, you have a non-Jew who converts. V'ayislo isa, and he had dough in his freezer. Nasis adshlo nizgar, if the dough had been made before he converted, so pater, he's off the hook, because when it's made, it was pater. Uv mishnizgar, if he made the dough after he converted, then chayev. Right, straightforward. Vim safek. Now what happens if you don't know? He's lost track of, was this the dough he made before or after his conversion? So then, chayev. You're chayev from safek. Why? Because chal is a mitzvah doraisa, and safek doraisa lechumra. So he has to take challah. However, I should point out that he won't have to give it to a kohen. He won't be able to eat it because safik doraisa lechumra. But he have to give it to kohen because we say in a financial obligation, a motzim chaver lavaraya. It's the burden of the kohen. The kohen has the burden of proof is on the kohen to prove that taka it really belongs to him. So since he can't eat it and he doesn't have to give it away, what can he do? He can sell it to a kohen. That's what he'll do. Ve'ein chayav le'achomish. On the other hand, if he eats the safik challah on accident, normally when you eat challah you have to give chomesh. Here we're exempting it because the reason why you have to give back the keren, the principal amount, so you ate the challah, you have to now take the same amount and give it to a kohen. That's required for your kapara. Like when you have a gezel, you have to get it to return what you took. However, the extra chomesh is like a penalty, so you shouldn't, you know, be so cavalier in eating people's challah, but it's not required for getting kapara. So if it's only a suffix, you have to still give the money back, you have to give back the keren, the principal amount, but the chomesh you don't have to add. Rabbi Kiva argues on everything we said up to now for the whole perek. He says the critical moment for wheat is not Gilgal. Hakol holach achar hakrima batanor. It's when it starts, krima is when it starts to get like a crust. So when it starts to get a crust in the oven, that's when the Kiva kicks in. So the deadline for all these cases isn't about Gilgal, it's not when you take it and put it in the oven and it starts to get a crust on the outside. We have a couple two more Mishnahs to do. Maybe three more Mishnahs to do. So, Mishnah Zayin. What's talking about? Okay. We're going to give this the short version today. We're talking about a mixture of flour and made of wheat, and also flour made from rice. Now, rice flour is normally exempt from challah. However, the Yerushalmi explains, we're learning through Yerushalmi here, take it simple. The Yerushalmi explains that wheat and flour together will rise. Wheat flour and rice flour together will rise. Even if it's only majority rice, it doesn't matter. Okay? Now, there's a separate issue, which is, this is our case. Our case is a mixture of wheat flour and rice flour together. You have a dough that's made of both flours. In yeshba tam dagan, if you can taste, if it's still a perceptible taste of wheat in there, so then chayev is b'challah, since it'll be like this, it's chayev challah because there's wheat in there also, and the wheat is significant. According to the Bavli, the issue is like tam keker. If you can taste it, it's like actually there, and it's not batel, because min, it's a mixture of min b'shein omino, a mixture of two unlike things. Wheat and rice together, and min b'shein omino, to a mixture of two unlike things, is not batel. The wheat will be batel unless it's you can't even taste it. And therefore, it's considered like it's good as having wheat there all together. You make matzah out of flour and rice, even though it's only the vast majority is rice. It's okay as long as you can still taste the flour. You can be yotzei in Pesach. Right, exactly. That's what I said yesterday, but I try to point out, if you can eat flour, you can eat rice. So, ve'im ein batam dagon, if you cannot taste the wheat there, it's too little to taste the wheat, so ein achev is b'chala, it's as if it's totally batal, it's just rice, and rice flour is exempt from chala, so it's exempt. Ve'ein adam yotzi yidei chavasa b'pesach, you can't use it as matzah, because it's not considered from five species, which is what matzah requires. Okay, Mishnah Ches. Two more to go. Okay, now, what happens if you have sa'or, that's the sourdough that's chayav in challah? So, hanotel sa'or me'isa, you take sourdough from the batch, shelo hurma chalasa, and the batch you're taking it from had not yet had its challah removed, therefore the sourdough now is chayav in challah. Venosan latocha isa, and you put it into another batch, shahur machalasa, that had its challah removed from it. So now the problem is, somewhere mixed up in the dough, you have a bit of sourdough that needs to be tied, the 124th.
What does
horma
mean?
Horma is like from tarim, like from rutshuma, to lift up, but to remove here. So what are you going to do? How are you going to possibly find the 124th of the sourdough mix in there? It's a big problem, you'll never find it out. And therefore, im yesh lo parnasa makamacher, if you have your parnasa, interesting use of the word here, you have another supply of food elsewhere, another batch of dough. So instead of taking 120, let's say for argument's sake, you have another batch of dough that hadn't had challah taken from it, so you take, instead of taking just the 24th of this, you take a 24th of the total amount of this dough, plus whatever sourdough you put in. And he said, I'm taking now for both, the sourdough, the sour in my batch, plus this whole batch together. It's easy to do, right? And why don't you take for both batches?
Assuming he makes it right.
It's a question. Batch.
Yeah. Even assuming he makes it already.
Let's say he mixes the sourdough, it's not separate. He can then take it 1/24 of the other dough without the
That's plan B, but that's losing a lot of dough. Right. It's a little bit of sourdough, it's a lot of dough.
Well, but in that case, you really catch it out and take it.
Yeah, but it's mixed up. There's different kind of mixtures. I'm gonna get into it now. This is called yavish b'yavish and lach b'lach, like wet mixtures, like liquid mixtures. Of course, mixed thoroughly, like homogeneous. You can assume, if you put one part juice into 10 parts of water, you can assume if you take out one cup, it's 1/11th of it is it mixed up equally. Whereas if it's dry things, it's more not so pashut. So there's actually machlokas in the Nos Kalim, what in the Yoredea, if flour is actually lach balach, because the particles are so small, they'd be considered, even those, right, it's very mixes very thoroughly. Right? Statistically, you take. Anyways, be that as it may, we want to avoid having, if we have a little bit of sourdough in a huge batch of bread, we don't have to take a 24th of the whole thing, that's wasting. So if you have another batch, take from that batch and just add an extra 24th of the sourdough in, if you can. About the
fi cheshbon. I don't understand that. Can you explain it?
Yeah. I'd say each of our batches is going to be, I don't know, 24 liters, for argument's sake, 24 liters of flour, enormous things, right? And then one of your 24 liter batches, you put in, I don't know, 24 cc of sourdough to ferment it, like the yeast a little bit. So now, really all you need to take is like 1/24, you should take like one cc of challah on that sourdough, but now you mix it up. Now you've got 24 liters and a bit. So you have to take, if you want to take challah from here, you have to take a whole liter and put it, give it away. Well, like it's a whole liter of dough, which you don't want to do. So if you have another batch of dough that has also a separate 24 liter batch of dough that has not had challah taken from it, so you say, fine, I'm going to take 1 liter out of here, plus an extra one cc, 1 milliliter for that sourdough, take 1.001, and you say, this is challah for this batch of dough, plus the little extra I'm adding is for that sore, wherever it is in that batch of dough.
I don't understand what that little thing
is. I need to still take, give challah on behalf of that sore mixed up in the big batch here. Yeah?
Why?
Because I took sore that hadn't had challah taken from it.
Oh.
And I mixed into something that had challah taken.
Yep.
Sorry, so that's the point. So if you have another batch, just take 1.001 and you're good to go. In the case of exam. But if you haven't got a separate batch, so now all your, you have no more dough. All you have is your big, huge vat with a little bit of sourdough. Too bad. Motzi chala achas ala kol. You'll take a full 1/24 of the whole mixture, and then you'll assume you got 1/24 of the soor.
When you have to take 1/24 anyway, because
this you put a soor that hadn't had challah taken from it into a back that had had challah taken from it.
Oh, got it.
Okay, no problem. And last case here, kiyotzibo, a similar kind of case here. If you have zeisim musik, zeisim are olives. Musik is the verb used for the normally harvested olives. Shnis avru, like a mixed up, im zeisim nikuf. Nikuf literally means like, I don't know what you call it, like banged. But it means that two pshatim, there's no difference, no locus. Either means.
Crushed.
Oh, sorry?
Crushed.
Nikuf means to like. I think it's not crushed. I think it means bang. Whatever. I think that's what it means. Either way, Marhu means to be crushed?
No, it means to like knock.
Knock, yeah, something like that, yeah.
He's saying that one of the explanations for the word is because do the olives at the top of the tree that you can't really reach because the branches are too thin? So
that's right.
With sticks to make it
beaten down.
Beaten down, something like that, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So the point here is you left some olives on your tree. Now, two pshatim, it's no difference. Either you left the pshatim on the tree because it was like a gift to the poor, and they're like pay or whatever, or you just couldn't be bothered and you're mafkaritz. Either way, the point is, whether it's a gift to the poor or whether it's hefker, that's exempt from truma, right? So if you have a batch of regular olives that are chayv and truma and a few olives that weren't, or vice versa, or a few, more likely in this case, I guess, you have a few that are chayv with a lot that aren't, right? Or inve batsir, batsira is the verb used for harvesting grapes. So normally harvested grapes. Im inve ololos, ololos are the misshapen clusters which you have to lift the former. It hasn't got a katef at the top, hasn't got a shoulder, they're all like kind of on a single sharvit, and hasn't got natef, hasn't got one at the bottom, like a drop at the bottom. These weird shaped, you know, pathetic clusters. You have to leave those for the poor. So if you have a mixture of your regular harvested olives, grapes, I should say, with your olus, your weird grapes. So really now, you have a mixture, and you have to take truma, and the hafrashas from it. How are you going to do it? You don't want to give away the full amounts of everything. You lose 20%, essentially, right? With truma and meiser and meiser sheni. So you don't, and most of it's patur, let's say. So im yesh lo panasa makam acher, you have a separate batch of olives or a separate batch of grapes, and those are vadai chayev. So take out the normal, take 10% for, let's say, for meiser out of those grapes, plus add whatever you need to know for whatever's mixed up in the mixture, and say, I'm taking the meiser for both batches, right? And if don't, vim lav, if you haven't got it, then motzi truma, truma's meiser la kol, then your whole mixture, even if you have, you know, 20% of it is chayev, in 20% of our regular grapes, and the other 80% actually would have been putter if you wouldn't have mixed them up. He says, too bad, you have to take on the whole 100% truma and truma's meiser, so that truma would be, 2% of the whole thing, of the whole batch, and truma's meiser, that's the 1%, because remember you take meiser, 10% and 10% of that, meiser. So those things are usher to eat. There's an isser for a czar to eat truma or truma's meiser, so you have to get that out. You have to get out of your mixture, you have to be machmer. Vashar, but the rest, you can be makel. Meiser, sheni lefi cheshbon. You can just figure out how much of the chai of olives are in there and take out that amount. Because the reason why is there's no isser for a regular person to eat meiser, just that it's a financial obligation. So as long as you took equal the dollar amount that you owe, give it to Levi, you're off the hook. He'll be happy and you'll be happy. But the truma and the truma's meiser you have to take out because that you're not allowed to eat, you have to give that to a kohen. Okay? Yashar koach, stop there.